Hey everybody, Wasilla Steve here from Alaska. You know, I listen to five or six podcasts regularly, and one of them is the handgun world. And why? Because I, too, am a cancer survivor. And because Bob survived cancer, and I survived cancer, Bob got the pleasure of teaching me in two of his classes. And boy, did he ever enjoy that. And I'm not trying to brag or anything, but he taught the best student he has ever had, that being my good friend who attended the classes with me. So here now, a true survivor, a great American, and hands down, one of the best instructors I know, Bob Main.
Hello folks, I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode 458 of the Handgun World podcast, a practical show done by a practical everyday guy, and that is me. Is the world a hot range? What kind of range, shooting range, should they be? Should they be cold ranges? Should they be hot ranges? What about when you're out there walking around with your concealed handgun? These are the topics that I'm going to discuss in this episode, plus some voicemails from some listeners about self-defense and fitness, a little bit on that, and a little bit on interacting with police if you're stopped while you're carrying your guns and things like that. Episode 458 starting right now. I want to get this whole thing kicked off by saying it's good to have you listening, and I want to just continue to extend a thank you to everybody out there for tuning in every show. I apologize, this one is a couple of days late. We're about a day and a half late. Usually I try to get them out on the 1st and the 15th of every month. This show is sponsored by Concealment Solutions, makers of fantastic concealed carry holsters. I use them. I've got six or seven of them. Almost all the time I am using a Cobra outside the waistband, strong side hip carry, all Kydex holster. Cobra holster by Concealment Solutions. Many people like the Black Mambas. If you like a hybrid inside the waistband holster, check them out. ConcealmentSolutions.com. I'm a user. Now, I'm not just a paid advertiser. I'm a user for them. Handgun World, all one word coupon code, will get you 10% off at checkout. So you enjoy a nice discount and let them know that I am sending them traffic. So let's get right into the very first listener voicemail I'd like to cover.
Hey, Bob, this is Lonnie from Florida. I apologize for the road noise. I'm currently traveling. Just wanted to say I'm a longtime listener, actually subscribed to today's survival show, and I heard you mention the Handgun World podcast, so I subscribed to that and still listening. So wanted to thank you also for your Christian stance that you take. You do it in a very kind and gentle way. I know you mentioned in a couple weeks ago that you were concerned that you may not be, but you are. You're always very nice and kind about it, not overbearing in any way. And it's nice to hear someone take a stand on the Christian issues when they are so frequently ridiculed and made fun of by the media and others. So thank you for that, and we really appreciate it as one person to another. Also, wanted to mention, about a year and a half ago, you mentioned you were going to start a push-up regime regimen, and wanted to tell you that actually inspired me. I was actually thinking also of starting a body weight exercise regimen, and that's what happened. I started off just doing push-ups. Beginning, I could only do a few push-ups, but now I've added other exercises, body weight exercises, sit-ups and dips and other things. And I did not want to let not having a gym membership or a bunch of free weights stop me from exercising. So I would like to share that with anybody else too. Go to YouTube, look up body weight exercise. You have tons of exercises you can do for almost every muscle group in your body. As I started doing this, also some other facets of my life were changed. Also, my diet got better. I started doing this work, and I was like, you know, I'm exercising, but I'm eating like garbage. So I greatly cut down the sugar, kind of cut down the carbs, started watching what I was eating, started eating more fruits, vegetables, things like that. Also started taking vitamins and supplements to help also. There's a bunch of different supplements out there, a bunch of different vitamins for a lot of different things. So I encourage people to look at that also and see what works for them. Also, to help reduce stress and be good for my body, I started doing square breathing. If anyone's not familiar with it, I encourage you to look it up. It helps regulate your body. And it's really helped to reduce the stress and feel a lot better. So I just wanted to share that with everyone, and thank you for also for kicking off my journey here, and encourage other people also to start their journey. Everybody's different. My journey's not going to be the same as
Lonnie, thank you for calling. Oh, you shamed me, brother. I stopped doing my fitness routine several months ago. I shouldn't have stopped. I'm really glad you called in this voicemail because I've been lazy and I'm going to get back to it. Yes, I was doing push-ups. I was doing sit-ups. I was going to the gym and all that. Lately, I've been taking a lot of steps every day. The job I do, I'm out doing sales calls, doing hotel site surveys and things like that. I use the Pacer app on my iPhone. I don't want to go out and buy one of those, you know, Fitbit things or whatever you call it. So I've been using the Pacer app, keeping track of my steps and calorie burn every day and miles walked and stuff like that. Been doing a lot of good walking. I really, you know what, Lonnie, thank you. You're going to get me back now into doing the push-ups and the sit-ups, and I'm going to just go back to what I was doing, start off with about 5 or 6 of each one, and every couple days increase it by one or two push-ups, 1 or 2 sit-ups, and do some body strength exercises like you were talking about. I'll check that out. Thank you so much for calling and doing that. And thank you for your compliments about my faith. And I do try to keep it toned down just a bit, but make the point that I am a man of strong Christian faith. And I don't fault anybody if they don't believe the same as me. You know, this show is about self-defense. It's about self-defense, and it's about handguns, and it's about competition shooting, and it's about training with your self-defense handgun. But I feel that you should know who the host is. You should know who I am. And I don't make any... I am not ashamed at all about my Christian faith. I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed to talk about it. And I know I've lost listeners because of it, but so be it. That's far more important than losing a couple of listeners. Thanks for the call, Lonnie. I appreciate it. And now let's go to a voicemail from Stephen in Georgia.
Hey, Bob. This is Stephen, formerly from upstate South Carolina. Now I'm from northeastern Georgia. But I'm a new TWP holder, and had a very strange incident where I got pulled over. My wife and I were arguing about directions, and the speed limit went from 55 to about 35 in a block, and I got pulled over. But it was very strange. Once I gave my TWP to the cop, it was like he didn't know what to do. So he took my gun, took it back when he wrote my ticket, and he gave it back to me unloaded. And but the whole thing was very strange. It seemed like he'd never had that come up before. He seemed uncertain of what to do, and it was very strange. Maybe he was new, I don't know. But just thought you'd like to know about that. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Stephen, thanks for the call. This is a good... a piece of information for listeners, because I want everybody listening to this show to realize not all police are familiar with concealed carry laws and regulations. Not all police are actually in favor of citizens carrying. And as you heard, not all police even always know what to do when they, for example, pull someone over who is carrying a firearm. Some police are. Some are very proficient. Some police are very pro-gun, and they're very much in favor of citizens carrying handguns. Officer Greg, when I was out on break, Officer Greg from California did a great guest podcast for this show back in January, I believe, and he talked a lot about this very subject. Go back and listen to some of my older episodes from December and January, because I had a lot of guest hosts. And hello, Greg, out in California. Officer Greg, thanks for everything that you do to contribute to this show and to just keep me motivated. And by the way, he designed the cool logo that I now use for the Handgun World podcast. But Stephen from Georgia, great call. Thanks for calling in, because it's important. You know, you need to do some research about traffic stops and things like that, and encountering concealed carry. You need to always know the proper way to interact with police. And one of the things that I have always found is just be calm. Just be honest. Just be calm. And it's most likely going to work out. Don't get defensive. You know, don't try to have an argument. And by the way, if the police officer doesn't know the law, don't try to school him on the law. I don't think that that's the time when you're being pulled over, or even if you're being questioned or whatever. That's probably not the best time to school that police officer if he or she does not know the law. I don't think that would be the best thing to do. Just, you know what? If you disagree with being questioned or being pulled over or whatever is happening, get a lawyer later. Challenge it that way. But just my own personal philosophy, don't challenge it while you're being pulled over. Now, I also want to take this opportunity to mention the fact that it's not too late to get signed up for the training class that Ben Branham and I are teaching, June 23rd and 24th in San Antonio, Texas, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. I'm getting together again one more time with Ben Branham from the Modern Self-Protection Podcast. We're teaching our signature two-day Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced class. Several people are signed up. There are a few spots left. Even if you've taken this class from us before, you're going to enjoy it because of two reasons. Repetition is the mother of learning. That's the way you learn things, and that's the way you master things. You repeat them over and over and over. And the second thing, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And we have changed the class a little bit. So you're also going to learn a few new skills and techniques as well. Also, Ben Branham and I, we do what's called the Shooters Club. Many of you support us that way also. For $75 a year or only $8 a month, you can access exclusive video content that we produce. How to shoot better, how to train better, how to even gun reviews, in-depth gun reviews, in-depth gear reviews, self-defense tips, security tips, home security tips, all kinds of things like that. Interviews with people that have had incidents before that you can get a lot of information from. All that is exclusive content you can't find anywhere else except for becoming a member of our Shooters Club. Once again, it's only $75 for a one-year membership, $8 per month. Go to shootersclubmembers.com. Shooters Club members, that link will also be in the show notes, and you can sign up that way. So while I was on a trip lately, I recorded the next segment. Is the world a hot range? Should there be cold ranges or hot ranges? I think the world is a hot range, isn't it? The world is a hot range. Here you go.
A woman is approximately 10 times more likely to be successfully raped when she doesn't have a gun, according to a Department of Justice study. This explains why women in the United States use firearms about 200,000 times a year to stop sexual assaults. It also explains why more than 40% of women own or already have access to a firearm. So why do some politicians want to disarm women? Maybe rape isn't a serious enough crime in their minds. Or maybe they don't want to stare down the wrong end of your barrel.
Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
This segment from the Handgun World Mobile Studio while I am on a business trip. Okay, it's called Cold Range versus Hot Range. And guru status. So let me explain. Recently, a very prominent firearms instructor had a negligent discharge while teaching a class. And I was reading a blog post by another firearms instructor. Both of these instructors I very much like and respect. And I was reading a blog post about the article. And I also read the blog post that was written by the firearms instructor that had the negligent discharge while he was holding the gun. And there are several reasons that it happened. I don't want to go into a lengthy explanation because I was not there. So all I can do is read about what happened. So it would not be my place to really comment about all that. I'll say this, though. Should ranges be a hot range or a cold range? Should ranges be run as a hot range or a cold range? Hot range means people are walking around with loaded guns in their holsters. Cold range means unless someone is actually firing, they have an unloaded gun in their holster. Now, is there really such thing as an unloaded gun? You know, technically, you can say that if there's no ammunition in the gun or in the magazine, then it's unloaded. But would you agree with me that one of the four great rules of firearm safety is to treat every gun as if it's loaded? Treat every gun as if it's loaded. Or some people say all guns are loaded. Meaning, never assume a gun is an unloaded gun. Well, that's pretty much what cold ranges do, don't they? A cold range basically walks around and feels that everyone's gun is now unloaded. And I'm not saying they're doing a lot of unsafe things and they're pointing guns at each other and things like that, or putting fingers on triggers when, or taking guns out of holsters when they shouldn't. But I think it's a very dangerous thing to think that everyone, that their gun is unloaded. Let me explain. It's possible to make errors. In this case that I'm talking about, errors were made by people who even, other people who inspected the gun and verified that it was unloaded when it really was not. You know, in competition matches, when you're done with the string of fire, you know what they make you do? For those of you who have never done it, they make you unload and show clear. And the sequence goes something like this. The range safety officer will say, if you are finished, unload and show clear. And so what you're supposed to do is first eject your magazine, get the magazine out of the gun, lock your slide back. What that means is if you got a round in a chamber, it'll come out. And then the range safety officer is going to look inside your pistol. Keyword, they're going to look inside your pistol, and they're probably going to say something like this: I see clear. Slide forward, hammer down, trigger, holster. And what they're saying is, I see clear, send your slide forward, hammer down. The reason they say hammer down is because if someone has a hammer-fired gun, they want to see that the hammer is down. What that means is, pretty much, you're going to have to press the trigger. If it's a striker-fired gun, you send your slide forward, you're going to have to press the trigger. And this range safety officer will ask you to press the trigger facing downrange, keeping your gun muzzle pointed at the berm, press the trigger. And then they'll say reholster. They'll give you the command to reholster. And then they'll say range is safe. Okay, now think about all that. First of all, what you've been asked to do, if you do that, you're being asked to press the trigger to verify a gun is unloaded. Give that some analytical thought for a minute. When are you supposed to press the trigger on a gun? What does that mean when you press the trigger? It means you want to fire the gun, right? Triggers are used to fire the gun. Some gun models, like Glocks, you have to press the trigger to disassemble them. Not a fantastic thing, but as long as you're not being a knucklehead and you're making sure that you're visually and physically checking your gun and also keeping it pointed in a safe direction should you make a mistake, well, then it's not that big of a deal. Those are about the only two times that you actually press the trigger, right? So why are people being asked to pull the trigger to verify that the gun is unloaded? Bad habit, in my opinion. Bad habit, because sure enough, here's what someone's going to do, probably already has done it. They're going to remember what they did in competition. They're going to unload their gun. They make a mistake, and there is a round in the chamber, or there's a round in the magazine about ready to go into the chamber. They'll send the slide forward, and they'll press the trigger, and boom, bang. They hear the bang when they're expecting a click. Why? Because they didn't do a proper job of making sure it was unloaded. And they developed the bad habit of pressing the trigger to verify that the gun was unloaded. Bad habit. Bad habit. That's one of those things in competition I just don't like. I'm a big fan of competition shooting. I do it all the time. It's one of the things I don't like. Unloading and showing clear is one of the things I don't like. But, hey, they want to run a cold range. Okay? Cold ranges give people a false sense of security that everything's safe. And when people are thinking that a gun is unloaded, they have a tendency to treat a gun as if it's unloaded, and they shouldn't do that. You should always treat a gun as if it's loaded. So I think cold ranges can breed a false sense of security. And even prominent instructors can make a mistake. So if even prominent instructors who train thousands and thousands of students every year for hundreds of days every year, if they can make a mistake, you and I can also make a mistake. Isn't that true? So this is why I think some of the bad habits should not be ingrained into people's heads. And if you compete a lot, or even if you don't compete a lot, when you go to a competition match, especially if you're brand new, you know, lots of brand new shooters show up for competition matches. And I love it. I love to see brand new shooters show up for competition matches. I love people getting into the shooting sports, realizing that guns can also be a fun thing. It's a good thing. But new shooters are also very impressionable. Very impressionable, and they will learn and they will practice and they will do things that they pick up. They will do things that they pick up on the range when they're there because, hey, that's what the so-called experts told them to do, right? Now, I understand match directors and range safety officers are probably thinking, oh, man, you know what? We got 35 or 40 shooters here. We don't know who these people are. We know nothing about them. We are not going to let them walk around our shooting range with loaded guns in their holsters. We're not going to do it. Well, how many people have been shot by an unloaded gun? Quite a few, right? You get the point. People get shot all the time by unloaded guns. Unloaded guns, I would submit to you, because of some of the points I just made, really not much safer than loaded guns. What is the world? Isn't the world a hot range? Hey, the world is a hot range. Bad guys are walking around with loaded guns, folks. Police officers are walking around with loaded guns. Other civilians who concealed carry, they're walking around with loaded guns. Even sometimes military men and women are walking around with loaded guns. There are people on military bases with loaded guns that are authorized to carry a loaded gun on a military base. So, think about it. The world is a hot range. Shouldn't we be treating everything as a hot range? Because that's the world that we live in. The city of Chicago is very much a hot range, isn't it? I was trying to be funny, but it's really not all that funny. I was trying to make a point there. The world is a hot range. Can we treat it as such? I think we would probably all be better off if we did that. Now, the next thing I want to say sort of ties into the topic matter of cold range versus hot range, or loaded guns or unloaded guns. And that is carrying with a round in the chamber. So many people think, well, you know, I'm just going to carry my gun with not a round in the chamber, no bullet in the chamber, because I feel safer that way. Okay, so you carry a gun for protection. You carry a gun to keep yourself safe. But you're going to carry a gun that is going to be impossible for you to use should you need it. Well, Bob, the Israelis do that. If you're not a member of the Israeli Defense Force, you need to carry a gun with a round in the chamber. And if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't even think that the IDF does that anymore, do they? I mean, I thought that that was a practice that started in Israel. I think that's what I had heard or learned in the past. You guys can feel free to call my voicemail number, 210-646-1727. Let me know if I'm wrong. 210-646-1727 or handgunworld@gmail.com. But if that's not you, if you haven't practiced 50,000 times drawing your gun and chambering a round, carry a gun with a round in the chamber. All right? And by the way, if you don't feel comfortable enough carrying your pistol or your revolver with a round, well, I guess, unless you don't entirely load the cylinder of your revolver, you're probably technically might not have one in the chamber. But most people are carrying semi-autos, most. And anyway, the point that I'm trying to make is if you don't feel confident carrying a gun with a round in the chamber, then get some training. Get some training so that you do feel confident. Right? I guess that's the advantage of a revolver, right? You can keep one cylinder empty, right? And then all you gotta do is draw your revolver and press the trigger, right? Yeah. And it lines up the next round and fires your revolver. Oh well. You know, the thing is, now you've reduced your capacity. Folks, the point I'm trying to make here, and I'm driving, so I'm trying to, you know, think and drive at the same time, which usually I'm pretty good at, but, you know, every once in a while, my mind gets a little scattered and I'll get it back on track. But if you are not confident enough carrying your pistol with a round in the chamber, please get some training. You can overcome that. I felt a little uneasy also when I first started carrying my gun, but I decided that what I was going to do is I was going to practice enough and I was going to get a little bit of training before I actually started carrying the stupid thing, because I wanted to carry it loaded. And it didn't take me very long to figure out, yeah, I got to keep it loaded. So get yourself some training. If you do decide to not chamber around and carry a gun like that, don't do it very long, please. Take whatever safety class you need to take or whatever kind of class that you need to take and carry it loaded. There are all kinds of ways that you can carry a loaded gun safely. If you're worried about yourself, about drawing the gun and pressing the trigger when you shouldn't and accidentally firing the gun, then either, number one, don't carry it, Or number two, get some decent training. All right, enough about that. But it kind of tied into the subject, and that's why I wanted to discuss it. Okay, guru status. Guru status. So this firearms instructor who I really like, I consider a friend, wrote in his blog that sometimes other firearms trainers get elevated to guru status, right? They're a guru. They're the great so-and-so, the great master, the great Jedi master of firearms. I think that's a dangerous phenomenon. And I'm not just talking about one person. I'm not going to name names, but I could name a dozen trainers that have been elevated to guru status. There's little that they can do wrong, and everything that they say is gospel, and everything that they say is absolutely perfect. And everything they do is absolutely perfect, and people worship at their feet. People, when it comes to firearms, or I mean, this happens with everybody. It happens with athletes. Athletes are elevated to guru master status. Actresses, actors, musicians, they all get elevated so high that they supposedly could do no wrong, and then people are shocked when they do. They're human beings, folks. They're human beings like everybody else. They put their pants on the same way every day. They go to the bathroom like everybody does. Okay? They eat food just like everybody else eats food. They're flawed human beings. They're imperfect. We're all human beings. I'm one of them. I have to sometimes be real careful not to believe my own press. I mean, I have a lot of listeners to this show. My show's been downloaded over 5 million times since I started it a little over 8 years ago. I'm in my 9th year, actually, and, you know, I get good comments and things, and people say nice things about my show and about my training and things, and thank you very much. I appreciate the good feedback. Sometimes I have to have a reality check. Bob, stop believing your own press, your own good comments. Stop believing that stuff about yourself, Bob, because you're not that great. You're not. You're just a flawed human being, Bob Main, and you're not very great. That's the kind of self-talk that I have to have with myself sometimes to bring myself back down to earth. And I think there are prominent firearms trainers and people in all walks of life that need to be brought down a little bit, that maybe need to eat a little bit of humble pie. Because it's a dangerous phenomenon, and once they, a lot of people, not everybody, but sometimes they start getting careless. They, you know, we even top-level shooters, this happens, too. Top-level shooters. You know, sometimes people get unsafe when they think they're really good. They're a real good shooter, and the firearm safety rules, that doesn't apply to them. Because they're good. They're a grand master. Now, I wish I was a grand master. I'm not. Grandmaster-level shooter. But there are grandmaster level shooters that kind of get a little full of themselves sometimes. A dangerous phenomenon. A real dangerous phenomenon. Physically check to make sure pistols are unloaded. And even if it's been visibly checked and physically checked, never under any circumstances point that muzzle of that gun in any direction other than at the berm or backstop or at the ground if the ground is suitable to absorb a bullet. If it's concrete, I would not suggest pointing it at the ground. Okay, if you come to a class that I teach with Ben Branham, we're going to make sure that you are operating your gun in a safe manner before we proceed with teaching any technique in the class. And if you're a firearms instructor, I'm talking to you right now. If you're a firearms instructor and somebody violates a safety rule more than once, that's on you. That's on you, instructor. If they do it one time, okay, that's on them. If they do it more than one time, then I think it's on you. And if you're a person that consistently, and I guess I'm talking about more than once, if you're a student in a training class or in a competition match, and you keep violating a safety rule, why don't you calm down, ask for yourself to be taken off of the line, and rest, get a drink of water, go to the bathroom, think about things, sit in a chair, do what you have to do, calmly talk to somebody about what's going on, and so forth. And by the way, here's something I've never understood about firearms instructors. I've seen them do this in class. Somebody starts becoming unsafe, and that instructor gets right up in their ear, I mean inches away from their ear, and starts yelling at them. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Here's somebody that has a loaded gun in their hand. They're doing something unsafe, and the instructor gets right up in their face and starts screaming and swearing? Oh, come on. Don't you think you might worsen the problem, Mr. Instructor? So, do it calmly. Do it calmly. Ben and I, we've had people doing unsafe things in our classes before. And I got to compliment Ben Branham. He's very calm about it. He's firm, but he's calm. He makes sure that the problem is handled. I learn from that, so I do the same thing. I am not going to jump in someone's face or start screaming in their ear, swearing at them, to put the bleepity bleep gun in the holster, or stop bleepity bleep, or stop putting your bleep finger on the bleep trigger, and being such a dumb bleep. And you wouldn't believe some of the things I've heard firearms instructors say to people on the range. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say about that. So with all that said, give me your thoughts and comments on this segment here, because I've got some voicemails coming up that I'm going to play for you, and I'm going to respond to listener voicemails. That's going to be coming up in the next segment. But I'd love to hear your comments and thoughts on this, because I really believe that the world is a hot range, and we need to train ourselves to think about it always as being a hot range, and all guns are hot, and let's not gain the false sense of security that it's okay to be doing things with guns on a shooting range, whether you're an instructor or whether you're a student, because they have been verified to be unloaded. Okay, next topic coming up right after the brief break.
Thanks for joining us for the Law of Self-Defense Case of the Week. I'm attorney Andrew Branca for lawofselfdefense.com. This case of the week is State v. Clinch out of the Missouri Court of Appeals in 2011. This case involved the issue of whether defensive force could be raised against a reasonably anticipated threat to take place in the future, or whether it required that the threat defended against must be an imminent threat, meaning a threat about to be carried out right now. In this particular case, we're really talking about defense of others rather than self-defense, but otherwise the underlying legal principles are the same. In this case, the defendant was the uncle of his sister's three minor children, and the children had been purportedly victims of abuse by their father, who would be the victim in this case. The parents were now divorced, and because of the father's court-recognized reputation for being violent and turbulent, he was permitted only supervised visitation with the children until he completed an anger management class. The defendant learned that the father was about to complete this anger management class and thus be a step closer to unsupervised visitation with the children, and the defendant determined to kill the father rather than allow what he anticipated to be further abuse of the children. The defendant learned that the father was to have another supervised visit with the children at a local McDonald's, and he prepared to kill the father at that time. The defendant took shooting lessons, bought ammunition for his gun, and bought targets to practice shooting with in preparation for the killing. On the day in question, the father arrived prior to the children at the McDonald's, parked his car, exited, opened up his trunk, and it was at this point that the defendant approached the father. He fired two shots at the father, striking him once in the buttocks. The father ran from the defendant, crying for help, and the defendant pursued him through the McDonald's parking lot, firing at him all the while. At one point, the gun jammed, and the father took a position of cover behind a pickup truck tire. The defendant cleared the jam, waited for the father to emerge from cover, and when the father stood up, the defendant shot him in the head. The defendant then walked around the truck to where the father lay on the ground and shot him two more times in the back of the head. Immediately after killing the father, the defendant set down his gun, and he was arrested at the scene a short time later. The defendant was indicted for first-degree murder, and he raised the legal defense of others. In effect, the defendant claimed that he acted in lawful defense of the minor children to prevent the father from abusing them again. The jury at trial found the defendant guilty of first-degree murder, and he was sentenced to life in prison without possibility of parole. He appealed his conviction on the grounds that the trial court committed reversible error when it instructed the jury that defense of others required that the threat against which they were being defended against had to be an imminent threat, a threat about to occur right now. The defendant argued that defense of others was lawful even if the threat facing the other wasn't imminent, wasn't about to happen right now, so long as the threat was reasonably anticipated, and in the case of the father's past abuse of the children, had made his future abuse of them reasonably anticipated, especially once unsupervised visitation was again permitted, which was going to happen shortly. In support of this argument, the defendant noted that the Missouri Defense of Person statute has two separate paragraphs, one for use of non-deadly defensive force and another for use of deadly defensive force. The defendant pointed out that although the non-deadly defensive force paragraph required that the threat be imminent, the deadly defensive force paragraph didn't mention a word about imminence. Now, given that the defendant had obviously used deadly force in this case, and that therefore the deadly force paragraph should apply, and the deadly force paragraph didn't say anything about imminence, the defendant argued that imminence was not a required element of his legal defense of others, and the jury instruction on defense of others should have excluded the requirement that the threat be an imminent threat. Here, the Missouri Court of Appeals held that the non-deadly defensive force paragraph and the deadly defensive force paragraph had to be read not in isolation from each other, but in combination with each other. In other words, the first paragraph, the so-called non-deadly force paragraph, sets the conditions that must be met before any degree of defensive force can be used, even just non-deadly defensive force. And then the second paragraph, the so-called deadly defensive force paragraph, sets additional conditions above and beyond those already set forth that must be met before deadly defensive force can be used. Because the any force paragraph required that the threat defended against must be an imminent threat, and the deadly force paragraph simply added additional conditions on top of those, that meant the deadly force defense of others paragraph implicitly incorporated the requirement of an imminent threat, in other words, a threat about to happen right now. A merely reasonable anticipated threat, no matter how genuinely believed, is not sufficient if it's not a threat that's about to be carried out right now. Incidentally, another way to describe a reasonably anticipated threat that's not about to happen right now is a speculative threat, one that may or may not ever happen in the future, and that will never be sufficient to support a use of force claim of justification. As always, I encourage you to read the whole case, and you can find that case in its full text at lawofselfdefense.com/COTW for Case of the Week. If you enjoy this content, I invite you to join us for the Law of Self-Defense live show every Wednesday, 2 p.m. Eastern. It's totally free to either participate live or to watch the recording after each show. For more information, point your browser to lawofselfdefense.com/show. Remember, you carry a gun so you're hard to kill. Know the law so you're hard to convict. I'm attorney Andrew Branca for lawofselfdefense.com.
Well, that's going to wrap up this episode. And by the way, thank you, Andrew Branca, for that case of the week. If you want to get any of Andrew Branca's Law of Self-Defense material, like his books, his classes, DVDs, digital downloads, all kinds of stuff like that, make sure you go to lawofselfdefense.com/handgunworld. lawofselfdefense.com/handgunworld. That is my affiliate link, and I'll be able to earn a little bit that way too if you get any of Andrew's material. Very good stuff. I have met Andrew a couple of times and highly recommend his material. Now, probably in the next episode, I'm going to talk some more about my M&P guns, my two M&Ps, M&P 2.0 compact and M&P 2.0 9mm version of my shield, because I'm really, really enjoying those guns. And I'm going to be talking some more about the Apex trigger kit that I had put in my M&P 2.0. I talked about that in the last episode. I am also going to be doing a Bob's Bullet Points video on it. By the way, if you are not looking at my video series and not following my video series, Bob's Bullet Points, search that on YouTube. Also, my Handgun World podcast videos and everything on YouTube, and just search Handgun World on YouTube and you will find me. So that's all for this episode. Once again, thanks for tuning in. Remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click. An example in this episode. Or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe, read your Bible every day. And I'll catch you next time. Thank you.